We are.
Please be attentive. It's December the 20th. It is 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We are on the record. This is Charles Chandler, presiding officer of the FRM matter, so-called. I am the presiding officer appointed by the New Hampshire Secretary of State, October 5th, 2010. We have, I believe, two witnesses today, but I have some preliminary matters before we get to the witnesses. It'll just take a couple of minutes. Mr. Forcier, on Friday, before we adjourn, you presented to me a number of documents, primarily from statements and memorandum of interviews created from the New Hampshire Attorney General's office. I have, for the record, I have reviewed all of those statements. I am informed through attorneys at the Bureau that there is no objection to their introduction in evidence if I deem it appropriate. The work product issue having been discussed, I'm going to go through the names and on the record issue a statement as to what I'm going to accept and what will become testimony. All parties remember that the rules of evidence do not apply in this hearing. Therefore, whatever comes in as evidence, I will attach whatever probative value I deem appropriate to that particular piece of evidence or testimony from a particular individual. So, Attorney Forcier, I'm going to start with this. There's an interview of Attorney Shepard, James Shepard. I'm going to defer the acceptance on that with the understanding that efforts are being made to secure Attorney Shepard as a witness. I am going to reject and will not accept as evidence a memorandum of interview involving Thelma Bean. I'm going to reject and will not accept as evidence a memorandum of interview of Ron and Jackie Stone. For the record, that does not mean I will not accept their testimony should those people desire to testify in person. I am going to accept into evidence the interview of Barry Glennon, done February 22, 2010. I'm going to accept into evidence the interview of Steve Lattice, done March 10, 2010. I'm going to accept into evidence the interview of Christopher Lent, done March 12, 2010. I am going to accept into evidence the interview of Peter Roth, done May 18, 2010. I am going to accept into evidence the interview of Donna Soucy, done April 27, 2010. I am going to accept into evidence the interview of Susan Gorman, done March 4, 2010. I am going to accept into evidence the interview of Jeffrey Spill, done April 27, 2010. And I'm going to accept into evidence the interview of Peter Hildreth, done June 11, 2010. All of the individuals whose statements I have accepted into evidence are attorneys licensed to practice in the state of New Hampshire, with one exception. That's Attorney Lent, I believe, who is licensed to practice in the state of South Dakota. The following people, I believe, are not attorneys, but I am going to accept their statements into evidence. And again, I will attach whatever probative value I deem appropriate. The interview of Mary Gerda, done March 17th and March 30th, 2010. The interview of Carrie Molan, done March 19th, 2010. The interview of Lori Cloutier, done March 22nd, 2010. And finally, the interview of Timothy C. Griffin, done April 6, 2010.
Can I say something for the
record? Certainly. Attorney Spill.
I'm aware that Mark Conley gave a statement to the DOJ, and I have inquired with them as to whether we received that or not. I haven't received it yet, but the indication is that I will receive it. I just don't know when.
Okay. I certainly have not received anything for consideration at this point in time. You have heard everything that I that I have. Would you please keep me apprised of your efforts with Attorney James Shepard? Mr. Forcier, I assume that you will present, because I have marked all over these things when, as I read, clean copies so that they can be entered into the evidence log. Can we?
We can do that for tomorrow morning.
We can do that. We will do that tomorrow morning.
Okay. Certainly.
Do any of you gentlemen have any other preliminary matters?
Attorney, I do.
Attorney Forcier.
I have a few things. First of all, I have subordination agreements for the Tangway project. You had indicated to our auditor, Carvel Teff, that you would like these subordination agreements if they were discovered, and he did, in fact, discover some.
Excellent.
So I wanted to give you the original copies of those mortgages or those subordination agreements. Linda Goyette, a lender who testified a few weeks ago, he indicated to her that if she had any foreclosure documentation
just,
to provide...
Just suspend for just a second.
Sure. Please.
Okay.
Linda Goyette, she was a lender who testified a few weeks ago. You had indicated to her that if she had any information on the foreclosure auction, to provide it to her, or foreclosure information. So she did, in fact, forward some information to the Bureau.
If I recall, I asked for information regarding the mortgagee's sale of foreclosure notice.
I believe that information is contained therein. She redacted her personal information off of it.
Okay. And also let the record show that on those interviews I indicated there have been redactions for personal information.
Correct. And
Mark that.
We're preparing the PowerPoints for the public. We hope to disseminate them today through our website. I have organized all the PowerPoints so that they're one presentation, so it's one click of a button. It still contains exact, you know, all six presentations that you had seen, except they're all chronologically together. And with the exception of one line me and Jeffrey Spill wanted to add in there with respect to the overall calculation of $27 million of monies unaccounted for, we felt the need to put a one line underneath there, sort of a caveat with respect to that number. And other than that, this is exactly as it was presented to you.
What does that one line say?
I don't know. The exact lines is something along the lines, paraphrasing now because I don't have it in front of me. This number does not take into account lender interest paid beyond the one-year period, which would serve to lower the number. Because of the voluminous amount of documents and some documents which we don't have, we are unable to accurately deduct.
I understand that. My only concern is in the presentation of the PowerPoint when it was articulated on the screen,
right,
that didn't show.
Correct. It basically was, when we, after reviewing it again and looking at that number, we determined that we'd feel best putting a one-liner in there of a warning that this number is not perfectly accurate because of the fact that we didn't take into account extra interest paid.
Are you going to present me with a disc of the PowerPoint?
This is the updated version, all under one.
With that one line on it.
With that one line on it, and we hope to...
All I'm going to ask you to do then is, on the record, it doesn't have to be today, it can be tomorrow, is to have that one line and have it verbatim. Just tell me exactly what you added.
I can have that ready just for the end of today.
That's fine. That's fine.
So, with your permission, we'd like to put this on our website as well and...
Do it. I mean, okay. With that understanding, I'm going to accept this and ask that that be marked.
And I'll read you the end of the line today.
Okay.
The last line that we added on there.
Attorney Spill or Wingate, do you have any other preliminary matters?
My only thought, Mr. Chandler, good afternoon. My only thought, Mr. Chandler, concerned the subpoena for Andrea Shaw. I see that you've already signed it. I just wanted to note for the record that we had attempted to secure her cooperation willingly. To that end, we traveled to Portland on November 2nd, 2010, and interviewed her on the record. Unfortunately, technology was not favorable to us, and we were unable to secure a decent rendition of that recording. It was our understanding that she would be willing to cooperate further in this process. That has not been the case. As the examiner, no doubt aware, Ms. Shaw has declined to cooperate with the Attorney General's inquiry and also to appear for the Governor and Council hearing on Mr. Hildreth himself. And we've received some information in the case that her testimony is very important for this process. We are unsure how long this process will take. Her counsel, Scott Drager of Bernstein Shore of Portland, indicated that he, on her behalf, is going to resist, and so it's a question of time. So we thank you, Mr. Chairman, for signing this, and that's the reason we need it.
Okay.
One other matter is we served Lawrence Baldy to appear, and we've been unable to contact him, so I'm sure at this point whether he's going to be put on Zoom.
But he was served.
Mm-hmm.
In hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else as a preliminary matter? Our first witness for the day then is Tom Hawley. Mr. Hawley, do you understand that these proceedings are open, they are being recorded, and if you choose to testify this afternoon, you will do so under oath? You understand that?
Yes, sir.
Would you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Okay, would you state, for the record, would you state your name, spelling your last name?
My name is Thomas E. Hawley, H-O-L-L-Y.
Okay. Mr. Hawley, I'm going to direct attorneys Forcia, Spill, or Wingate to start the questioning, and obviously I reserve the right to question at their conclusion.
Can you identify yourself for the record, please? And your address?
Thomas Hawley, address 227 Waukewan Road, Center Harbor, New Hampshire.
And what's your occupation, sir?
General contractor.
And did you, was there a time when you worked for Scott Fair?
Yes.
And when did you start that employment?
I actually started working for Scott back in 2002 when he asked me to build the addition to his existing office building. Once that was completed, I did not do any work for him again until 2006 when he asked me to start building some homes over in what they call Colonial Oaks, which is a project behind Center Harbor Christian Fellowship Church in Moultonboro.
And can you describe your experience for us in the building industry?
I've been in the building industry for approximately 25 years, and I have had my own business since 1984.
And do you build residential and commercial structures?
My primary business is residential, but I have done light commercial. Light meaning professional type buildings, no medical or anything of that nature.
Okay. What were your duties with Scott Fair?
Initially, my duty was acting as a general contractor building, like I said, for the Colonial Oaks project. We started the first building back in early 2006. At which time, once we had that all framed up, he asked us then to build another house for him. And also Steve Woodman, he was the owner of the project on Red Hill. After we had that house all framed up, he asked me again at the end of 2006 to build another house back on Colonial Oaks, which we did. After that house was all framed, I then left and started doing my own business for my own people. Came back, he asked me to then, in 2007, if I would be his inspector on his commercial, as he put it, his commercial construction loans, in which my job was to go out on the sites, look at what was being completed, what the owner or builder said was to be completed, to confirm all of that, and then I would come back and give written reports as well as a pictorial report on that site. From there, we went, and he asked me to start looking at the projects prior to funding, which means that the borrower would come and present their package to the loan officer. The loan officer then would give me the package, strictly the building part of it, to determine whether or not the individual is asking for enough money to finish the project, at which time, if everything looked good and contracts from the subcontractors for that project and so on were there, I would then present it back with a written report to the loan officer, and then I would not see that package again until such time as they would ask for an inspection.
Who were the loan officers that you worked with?
Primarily, I worked with Tom McNeil. Tom was the, as I understood it, the head loan officer for the commercial end of it, or construction loans. There was also several other loan officers that came and went that were presenting projects as well, but everything was funneled through Tom and then to me and then back to Tom and then from there within the their organization.
Did you have a workspace at Financial Resources in America?
I had not a workspace in Financial Resource Building, but I had a office trailer in the parking lot of Financial Resources.
And just so the record's clear, the two homes that were built on Colonial Drive, were they the only homes constructed during the existence of Financial Resources?
They were the only homes on that project that were at least to a point of being finished off. Later in 2009, there was two additional foundations that were being that were put in, but I had no knowledge or I was not part of that at all.
Who was?
To the best of my knowledge, that was done by Larry Baldy, for they were going to be putting in modulars onto those foundations, and I was not a part of that.
Do you know what the plan was for the modulars?
I was under the impression that what they were planning on doing was going with the existing living.
Assisted, you mean?
Assisted, yes,
yeah.
Please. Sorry. Assisted living on those foundations. And I had no interest whatsoever to be a part of A, assisted living, B, modular homes, and also, two, to my knowledge, according to the deeds and documents for that particular subdivision, it was only for single family residency.
So during the time, after the time that you were involved with the sites, the two homes, the plan for the sites changed?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what was the quality of the construction that you did?
I honestly believe it was very, very good quality. My own people did it, built it. We did the finishing of it on the one, once it did sell, which I believe that was at the end of 2007. That was lot number one. And once that sold prior to closing, I was sent back in to actually do the finish work, putting in the flooring, railing systems, cabinets, etc. The quality is excellent. Had absolutely no problems whatsoever with code enforcement on any phase of the construction.
So those weren't, is it fair to say those weren't modular homes?
No, sir, they were not. They were stick built.
Okay. Were those homes sold to Don Dodge?
It's my understanding that they were, but I could not confirm that. The reason I say that is I was sent in to put in for lack of a better word, makeshift kitchen, so that we could hook up all the plumbing and receive a certificate of occupancy so it could be sold. I was told that this was done because they wanted to get out of the construction loan and into a conventional mortgage, and that Don Dodge's name was mentioned as the person that would be holding the mortgage and owning those houses.
Who's the they that wanted to get out of the construction loan?
they would have been Scott Farrow or Financial Resources.
And how were you paid for the site inspections and the building that you did?
This building was a direct bill to Financial Resources for labor and materials. The site inspections, again, was billed to Financial Resources, but the actual payment was to come out of the borrower's funds.
Okay. Did that hold true for the building as well?
Which building is that, sir?
When you built the two homes, the funding for that came out of the borrower's account?
That I don't know, because all billing went directly through Financial Resources and was paid through Financial Resources.
And who submitted the bills?
I submitted all the bills.
Did you handle any of the money?
I handled only monies of that I requested. The requested money was request for payment was sent to Financial Resources along with an invoice, and who it was supposed to be cut to. Checks were then given to me. I then had a receipt of payment receipt on all monies that was paid out, saying that they received it. Once that subcontractor was done with his end of the contract or project, he then, on final payment, would sign off a waiver of lien. That was my own internal workings to make sure that we had an accountability of all monies.
Now, when you said the only money you handled was money to you, do you mean money paid to you?
No, money that was for those particular projects. It would come through me only as a person handing out the money to be paid for that particular project.
And what was it, CLNM that the money was drawn on?
I received checks from CLNM, and I also received checks from Financial Resources.
On both accounts?
I really don't know the internal workings. It was one time I would get a check that was on Financial Resources with Scott's signature, and then the next one I would receive for the same project for CLNM with Diane's stamp on it. So I'm not really sure where the funds were being handled or who was handling them, but all I know is that when I received the check, it went to who it had to go to.
What was your involvement with Beaver Pond Estates?
Beaver Pond Estates, we started that in 2008 as far as building. I was asked to be the project manager for that. My job responsibility was first to put together the budgets for each one of the buildings. Those budgets then we had to follow. Once those were approved, the approval went through Scott Farah, so approving the budgets, what we're going to be spending for each one of the units. I then was responsible to go through the city of Laconia to pull and require all necessary permits. Once permits were pulled, then I would oversee the actual construction. My company, as far as my building company, we did not personally build. I just oversaw. I hired subcontractors to come in and do the framing, plumbing, electrical, insulation, sheetrock, and so on. I oversaw it, made sure that they stayed to the schedules, and that they were passed all inspections, and then I made sure that they received their payments.
Do you recall what the budget was for each individual unit? If you don't, you don't.
I believe each individual unit, the budget was $130,000. However, we actually came under budget by about $14,000 on each one of the units. So the net result there would be somewhere around, $115,000, $116,000 is what it came in at.
Did the $130,000 include the infrastructure or not?
No, sir. It was strictly the building.
And what was the sales price per unit, if you recall?
They were starting off at $159,900. To $179,900. The $179,900 was the starting price for the end units.
Do you recall any of those units selling?
No, sir. I don't recall any sold.
Okay. Did you oversee the infrastructure?
No, sir. I did not oversee the infrastructure. I was brought in after the infrastructure started and was approximately 90% completed.
Do you recall what was done for infrastructure?
The infrastructure in the main area itself was we had retaining ponds built, clearing of the lots. We had city water brought in, city sewer was brought in, electrical was brought in. These were all underground, and they also paved the two main roads. The paving was done with just a base coat, with the final coat to be put on after the project was complete.
And what was the quality of construction in your opinion?
Quality of construction, in my opinion, the final product, I believe, was better than average, above average. The process, in my opinion, was aggravating. A lot of things were done that I thought could have been done differently. That slowed my end of it down. But I think everybody on a job site thinks that they have a better way of doing something. So, all in all, I would say that the lineman did a very good job. His men were very cooperative, and I know that all of the site inspections were done were good. We did have a few problems with the city, but that was the parts that I was involved in. It was the city would say one thing for us to do, we would do it, and then somebody else from the city would come out and do an inspection, and they wanted it done differently. So there was a communication problem between the city and Lyman, and so we had a little battles there. But to the most part, everything was done good.
Were you involved in the condominium approvals with the Attorney General's office?
There was none, to the best of my knowledge.
I want to go back to Colonial Drive in Red Hill. Do you know why Scott switched you from one subdivision to the other?
Have no clue, sir.
Were you the site inspector for Tangway's Abbott Village?
Yes, sir, I was.
And what were your duties for that project?
That project, initially, again, Mr. Tangway presented the idea of his project to Financial Resources. Scott then gave me his drawings, architectural drawings, and his budgets. I then ran the numbers on the budgets based on the information I had as far as the buildings were concerned, and let Scott know if the amount of money he was requiring for the units would in fact finish the units, which they did at that time. Then from there it went back into Financial Resources' hands for them to do all the financial stuff, and I didn't hear anything else about it until I got the okay to go down and do the first inspection. And then from there I inspected, and like any multifamily inspection, each unit was inspected individually as well as collectively within the building, of how far it was going along and at what stage it was at.
Did you feel Tangway's budget was appropriate for what was being constructed there?
For what it was being constructed at the time it was started, yes.
And what was the per unit cost, if you can recall?
I really couldn't recall it, sir.
Okay. At some point, were you made aware that the construction was over budget?
No, sir.
And again, was the billing handled through you?
No, sir.
Okay. Was that handled through Mr. Tangway?
The normal procedure was for the borrower to submit invoices and payment schedules directly to, I believe it would be CL&M, in which then they would turn around and cut the checks and send them out.
And were you paid for your duties with that money?
Yes, sir.
How were you paid?
I was paid through the CL&M against the Tangway
account.
Okay. There you go.
And we paid, how much were you paid per inspection?
$400.
Attorney Wingate?
No, thank you.
Attorney Forcia?
Actually, one question. Were you ever a borrower of Financial Resources or CLNM?
No, sir, I was not.
Were you ever a lender?
No, sir, I was not.
No further questions.
Hey, I have one.
Yes, sir.
Is it fair to say that my understanding of your relationship with FRM and Scott Farah and CLNM extended in part to making estimates on a proposed project's budget as to the reasonableness of somebody's anticipated construction costs for units in a project?
Yes, sir.
Did you at any time ever pass on or give advice to either Scott Farah or Donald Dodge on the financial viability of a project, not necessarily based upon the cost to build a unit, but based upon projected market selling price and market considerations?
Yes, sir, I did.
You did?
Yes, sir.
So if Scott Farah asked you to look at Beaver Pond Estates and said, Tom, does this project make sense in light of the market? You then would review market viability for him?
What I would do is give him my opinion, but that would be based on what we're doing as far as construction, general location, and what things we're selling in that area. Yes, sir.
Okay. I have nothing further. Mr. Spill, Mr. Wingate, Mr. Hawley, thank you. Your excuse.
Thank you.
One end, okay. Let the record show that our second witness for the afternoon is Dennis Maloney, whose first name is spelled with one N. Mr. Maloney, it's my understanding that you are an attorney licensed to practice in the state of New Hampshire, therefore I would consider you to be an officer of the court, and it would be unnecessary to swear you. But you do understand that this proceeding is public and is being recorded, is that correct?
I do, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome to the proceedings, and that having been said, and recognizing that Mr. Maloney is in fact an officer of the court, Mr. Spill or Mr. Wingate or Mr. Forcia, however you wish to proceed.
I'd like to proceed, sir.
Mr. Attorney Spill.
Thank you for coming, Attorney Maloney. You in fact practice with the law firm of Gallagher, Callahan & Cottrell, right?
I do.
And how long have you been an employee of that law firm?
I came to New Hampshire in 1985, so since then, September of 1985.
And at some point, did you represent Financial Resources and Assistance in the Lakes Region?
I did.
Okay. Did you ever represent Scott Perry individually?
There were a couple matters during my time with Scott where certainly I recall one in which Scott was involved, but the named party was a trust that his wife, Susan, was involved in. I believe it's the Riverview Trust.
When did you come to represent Financial Resources and Assistance in the Lakes Region?
I was retained at the time that the administrative proceeding of the Bureau of Securities Regulation had commenced.
Would that be the fall of 2001?
I believe so.
What did you understand the action to be against Financial Resources and Assistance?
The main complaint concerned the sale of unregistered securities, issuance of promissory notes to fund his mortgage business. That was the main complaint.
Were those unsecured or secured notes?
I don't know. I believe they were mostly unsecured.
Prior to your, or during the preliminary stages of your representation, did you come to review the steps that had been taken prior to your engagement?
The main effort I did initially was to try to assess the amount of debt that financial resources had accumulated in order for its business purposes. And Mr. Farah had accumulated money through several different means, including the issuance of notes, use of promissory notes. He established a form of an account, which was a way you could basically, quote, deposit money with financial resources. So there were numerous avenues by which people had invested or deposited money with financial resources. So the many months were spent getting our arms around the total amount of debt that had been issued.
Do you recall who represented the company with respect to the Bureau's action prior to your engagement?
I don't per se. I had been introduced by a fellow who went to law school with me from the Lakes region who knew Mr. Farah. So we had both gone to law school together. So that I believe the proceeding had commenced, but when I got involved, but we basically started from the get-go with the requesting a hearing. And
okay. Was there some resistance on the part of financial resources to provide information to the Bureau?
I don't think. That was not my...
I mean, prior to your engagement?
I don't know.
You just described the various notes that you encountered when you reviewed the status of the finances and financial resources. Does the word factoring mean anything to you?
Factoring is generally used in the, as I understand it, in the receivables area on the other side of a company where they have products already to that have been sold, and people have either owed money or given a note for those receivables. So often factors, as I understand it, get involved in financing products, either for purchase or sale of a retail usually.
And was Financial Resources and Assistance the holder of these factoring notes?
I don't know for sure, but we also looked not just at what money was owed to that financial resources owed, such as notes and so money that it owed to investors, but also we had looked at what assets it had to match up its liabilities. We looked at what has the money been invested in. One of those, maybe more than one, was a factoring investment.
Okay.
So that was... That was it existed on their books. It was something they had put money into. So as we were trying to garner resources to figure out what we had and what we owed, that was the factoring, yes.
The assets that you just described, do you know whether they were valued?
I don't know.
Did you work with any other professionals to determine the amount of the debt or financial resources? Is Mr. Connor ring a bell to you?
Well, yes, he does. In addition, there was an independent auditor involved over the years with financial resources.
Was he the independent auditor?
Yes, sir.
So is it fair to say you worked with him to determine the amount of debt owed?
I worked with him to help me confirm and verify my numbers and calculations. We assisted each other to some extent in moving the ball forward.
Do you recall the amount of the debt that was owed when you were first engaged?
No. I think it was whittled down a little bit before the final settlement with the Bureau. But.
Was there some difficulty in assembling the information that would allow Mr. Connor to determine the amount of the debt owed?
I don't know. Auditors have their own means of assessing things. He had his own tests for time. It did take quite a bit of while. There were numerous parts of the financial resources puzzle. There must have been 10, 20, 30 people in these accounts. So it took a while just to work through and narrow down the debt outstanding. So it did take a while. I wouldn't say there was any difficulties in getting to it.
And do you recall a hearing with the Bureau taking place in July of 2003?
Is that when we commenced the administrative process here?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Did you attend that hearing?
Probably with the Magistrate Glennon. Is that the proceedings you're talking about? Yes, I represented Financial Resources.
Prior to that time, was Financial Resources successful in paying down its debt to the loan holders?
I don't know. I believe that what began the whole process was an inability to pay off his note holders, which led to the Bureau's case.
And do you know what steps, can you recite what steps Financial Resources took leading up to the hearing to alleviate the debt?
To my knowledge, and if that was one of the initial meetings we had, I was still getting my arms around how much was out there, what their assets were, such as the factoring you talked about, any mortgages that they had and that they still held, and what they owed in money. So I think it took us a while to get our final number as sort of what liabilities were and what his assets were.
Was Scott Fair a good record keeper?
I'm not a judge of that, sir. He seemed to be able to produce things when I asked him for it.
Was there discussion about redeeming the notes?
Certainly, in the context of the Bureau's proceeding, it was clear that in order to remedy the situation, we would have to redeem the outstanding debt, yes.
Was there some difficulty in the ability of Financial Resources to do that?
The ordinary case of a redemption, offerer has the resources in pocket before they make an offer to redeem. The Bureau's historical position had been that one needed the funds in hand before they could make a valid redemption offer. So there was certainly they certainly were not in a position to make a total redemption offer for the several million dollars that was outstanding initially, so it was done piecemeal to redeem bit by bit.
Do you know what portion of that amount was redeemed prior to the hearing?
Prior to July 2003?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have no idea, sir.
Was there an ability to pay off at least some of that debt prior to the hearing?
I have no idea, sir.
Do you recall whether there was a plan in place to accomplish the redemption?
In July of 2003?
At any time.
Yes, we developed a plan with the Bureau's assistance after we had narrowed down a list of everybody that we owed money to. Mr. Farah and Financial Resources knocked them off bit by bit and would redeem them to the extent they had funds available, to my knowledge, and I made periodic filings with the Bureau until we had essentially redeemed all the outstanding debt.
Okay, was that... we had the hearing in 2003, correct?
We had several hearings, sir.
In front of Mr. Glennon?
We had several hearings, to my knowledge. Several motions were filed, and we had a couple hearings. But you're the expert on that. Do you think there was only one hearing? There were motions to dismiss and all kinds of things.
After the July 2003 hearing, was there a period of hiatus when there was no activity on the case? Was there a decision in the July 2003 hearing?
If you are asking me if the administrative officer didn't rule for a while, yes, sir. But I don't exactly recall the dates now and what, but there were several instances of before the magistrate, and then things worked their way through, as I recall, until 06 or 07 when we finalized the consent agreement and everybody was redeemed. But I don't have these July 03 dates in my mind, sir, so I can't answer.
Okay. Do you recall the Bureau meeting with Scott Fair at Financial Resources in the spring of 2006?
And that's the one where I was with you?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall any activity between the time of the hearing in 03 and 2006 between Financial Resources and the Bureau?
I'm not certain there was or wasn't. I'm not sure where we were in those days.
Do you recall why the Bureau was there in the spring of 2006?
I believe you have, well, certainly you requested the opportunity to meet, and I don't know if this is because there was, from time to time, the Bureau wrote me letters about particular information that came to their account, and it might be one instance that you were following up on, but you did recall, if I recall, write me several letters about perhaps transactions that came to your account, and I would respond to them after checking with Mr. Farah, but so I can't really say what happened during the time period without really looking for.
Okay, prior to the 2003 hearing, do you recall an attempt by the Bureau to contact the various investors that you had listed?
Yes, we did. We did make that. And if that's the time frame, I do recall that effort and an effort to write letters to them, too.
I'm going to show you one of those letters and ask if it's familiar to you.
Yes, I do.
Would like to.
I'd like to at least understand what Attorney Maloney is looking at.
Oh, for sure. I'm sorry. I thought you had a copy, Mr. Chairman. Can you?
Is this introduced in some fashion in any of the earlier entries into evidence?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe so. Can I make a copy now?
I think I would like. Let's suspend for just a minute.
I'll be right back. Is there another one that we need a copy of or anything else?
No, that's a copy. That's for him.
This is for him.
Yeah. But I'd like.
Does he need to have a copy from him as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's have one for evidence, too, I think.
Yeah, let's have a copy. A
couple of copies.
Yeah. We're back on the record. Thank you, Attorney Forcier. We had suspended when Attorney Spill had delivered to Attorney Maloney a copy of a letter dated 6/16/2003. Attorney Spill, please proceed.
Do you recall providing a list of investors to the Bureau as a result of the Bureau's investigation?
Yes, we did.
Okay, and do you know whether, do you know why that was done?
In working with the Bureau and trying to resolve the administrative case, the Bureau requested the opportunity to write to each of the investors in Financial Resources. So it was agreed to work together to provide a list of the names to the Bureau, and I believe this letter was sent out.
Did you engage Mr. Connor to assist you in 2002, or was it 2001, do you recall?
Mr. Connor was the existing auditor for Financial Resources, so I did not engage him. I spoke to him. I'm not sure when I first spoke to him, Mr. Spill, but he was their existing auditor when I arrived.
Do you know about when you started to interact with him to determine the amount of debt?
I don't know the first time you would have asked me for a copy of the audited statements, whether it was for 01 or 02. I presume that was the time I did.
Okay. The audited financials that were produced by Mr. Connor, were those provided to the Bureau?
On numerous occasions they were, sir. I'm not sure which year, but I remember sending them to you, sir, for several calendar years, yes. During the height of the proceeding.
And who provided those, you or Mr. Connor?
He would provide them to me, and I would submit them here.
And just so the record's clear, leading up to the time of the hearing, what was your goal with respect to this problem of Financial Resources?
My overall goal was to keep the company alive and as a company in existence with employees.
Did you consider it a thriving business?
I don't know what that means, but I was impressed that they were able to redeem the securities. They made a good faith attempt to get there.
Did you understand this company to have an income stream, being an operating company?
To the extent that it was reflected in the audited statements, yes.
Was there any prospect of this company folding up and collapsing?
It's certainly not my expertise, sir. At the time of the Bureau's proceedings, they certainly did not have the assets to do a full redemption. So to that extent, they could not continue.
Did you ask for some time to see if those notes could be redeemed?
Yes, sir. A mutual agreeable resolution was reached in which Financial Resources was allowed to redeem its outstanding instruments and whittle the number down that we had provided to you. And that was done over many, I think it got several years.
Okay, was that... are you talking about the consent agreement?
Leading to the final consent agreement. There were numerous redemptions that were made leading to that, and each time a redemption was made, we had previously shown the Bureau who that note holder was, and when that note holder was redeemed, we'd send you a copy of the check and the sign-off by the note holder to knock that one off the list. So we proceeded to a final settlement consent agreement once the... we had significantly redeemed all the outstanding instruments.
Did you understand what the source of the assets were to pay those redemptions?
He was in the mortgage brokerage business. I presume they arose from his fee income as a mortgage broker.
Did you have any advice for Financial Resources with respect to the unsecured notes and whether he should continue along those lines?
He certainly could not issue any further notes. He was prohibited. Financial Resources was strictly prohibited by the terms of the agreement with the Bureau, even during the pendency of the proceeding, from issuing any more debt. And I was consistent with that.
Did you have any advice for Financial Resources about changing their business model?
We addressed how Financial Resources could continue to function as a mortgage broker without borrowing funds in the name of Financial Resources. The matter was addressed in discussions with Mr. Farah, and I believe it one memorandum that addressed what is known as table funding, where the funds would come to the closing table from the mortgage investor. They'd be held by an independent third party and used to close the loan. So the Financial Resources would not borrow the funds or be a party to the instrument by which the funds got to the table. They could get their brokerage fee from the closing, but would not borrow the funds in their own name.
Could you take a look at the letter to Mr. Reed from Scott Farragut on May 10, 2004, and the memorandum dated May
13,
2004?
Yep.
Are those familiar to
you? Yes.
Can you describe what those documents are?
In the context of working with Mr. Farah and how he could, consistent with law, find good investments for the company. He asked whether he could also he needed, as we just talked about, somebody to table fund those mortgages. Somebody that arguably and optimally was skilled in commercial mortgages. Scott asked whether he could review the public records in the registry, determine if any persons or companies were in the commercial lending business, and possibly would they be interested in investing, making loans to borrowers that were clients of Financial Resources. So the purpose was to look for third-party funders to fund loans that were brokered by Financial Resources under its first mortgage brokerage license.
When you say table funding, is this a term about used in the banking world?
I've heard it just in many contexts, but also but mainly real estate, where funds would come from an outside lender, usually the big banks or mortgage companies, and you'd have smaller mortgage companies that would have found the borrower and arranged for the closing. So oftentimes they would not have the funds themselves, but the loans were made in the name of the lender, who had basically approved the loan.
Now, turning your attention to the memorandum.
Yep.
As part of that review that you undertook with respect to your table funding, did you inquire with any other members of your firm?
Certainly, we have an active corporate finance practice, so we talk about these things quite a bit.
Did you consult with anybody in the firm with respect to that issue?
Well, the memo you showed me has my senior attorney there, Dodd S. Griffith, his DSG, so I wrote him a memo to bounce this off of him, to see, as we often do, if I was missing anything or if he was aware of some issue that I wasn't, in some case he had handled. I said, oh, yes or no, as far as whether this was a good practice.
And what was his response?
Obviously, we finished the memorandum. I don't have any specific recollection. I presume it was found to be okay, a proper business practice to identify lenders. Let's see if they were interested in making their own decision to invest in the mortgage. Make some work.
Now, did you relay any information to Scott Farrell with respect to his inquiry?
I would have conveyed that essential okay to him.
And there was no request to the Bureau to weigh in on this issue, was there?
No, sir.
Can I have those marked as well, Mr. Chairman?
Okay, you're asking me to accept into evidence again for whatever probative value. I'm going to attach the 6/16/2003 letter to a Taryn Johnson from you, a 5/10/2004 letter to a Mr. Reed, and an attendant memorandum from Attorney Maloney dated 5/13/2004. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mark those.
As one or separate?
Separate.
So, I want that. I want these two.
Do you recall any meetings between yourself, the Bureau, and Mr. Connor?
I do not.
With respect to our meeting in the spring of 2006, do you recall any discussion with respect to the Stone matter?
When we were up at Financial Resources
yes.
office?
Yes.
Had the Stone matter already hit the press at that time?
I believe so.
Okay. We probably talked about it. I don't recall per se.
I cut you off, I'm sorry.
I don't recall per se the context of the conversation.
Okay. Do you recall the Bureau inquiring in writing with you and Financial Resources to explain or at least to identify that matter for the Bureau?
Yes, I do. You had asked me to provide information about that litigation, and that was being handled by the Financial Resources Council, Gould and Burke, and so I exchanged some telephone calls and emails with that office and trying to get a proper response to the Bureau.
Call your attention to the letter marked June 5th, 2006.
Uh-huh.
Is that familiar to you?
It looks like the final one that came out of that office.
Have you seen that before?
I believe I have.
Okay. Did you forward that to the Bureau?
I'm not certain if I did or if they sent it to you directly, Jeff. Among other things, we've looked at the drafts of this, and they started writing it to me, and I asked them to write it to you. You had asked the question and to give the information to you, so I think it went directly to you, but I'm not certain.
Okay. And just so the hearings office is clear, did you assist in the editing of this letter?
I marked it up to remove what I thought was a lot of litigation statements and posturing and not firm facts. To state to the Bureau. So I did remove some puffery, I would say.
Okay.
Tried to narrow it down to what the facts were.
And the letter to me is addressed to me, correct?
Yes.
And it says that the matter was settled subject to a confidentiality agreement. Do you see that in the letter?
Yes, I remember being told that.
Okay. Do you recall whether the agreement was forwarded to our office or not as part of this submission?
I don't know. I never saw the agreement, so.
Do you want that marked, Mr. Spill?
Yes. During the 2006 time frame, prior to the matter being formally settled, did Mr. Connor report to you the various notes that were redeemed and retired?
No, he wouldn't report to me at all. Mr. Connor, the auditor, would periodically come up to the Financial Resources to do his work, and I would ask to see his results. He'd produce in particular a balance sheet where he reviewed from his point of view whether there was any preferred stock or notes issued, and that would help me to make sure from his point of view his numbers were sugaring out with what I had on my side. So there was one or more times where we had to reconcile some numbers and go back to Financial Resources on either one party or another to clarify some issues. So,
Can you take a look at the letter dated June 12th from Mr. Connor to you? Give me the package.
Okay.
Is that addressed to you?
It is. To M. Dennis Maloney. That's me.
No, it isn't.
Is it fair to say that that's a rendition of the various notes that had been redeemed at that time?
I'll have to read it, John. Mr. Farrell just said. Mr. Spill. This letter is in response to Scott's request to update you on our financial audit. I began our audit work today and can verify the following in regards to the capital debt schedule that was outstanding at 12/31/02. And then what was redeemed? So this is gives you an idea of the numerous instruments that the financial resources had used: preferred stock, notes payable, we got the accounts payable, and we were keeping track of things. So I would say that was the purpose of this, to coalesce with what his audit numbers were and what I felt from the redemptions and things I had seen and sent to you. So I don't really recall this letter per se. But
if you take a look at your letter to me, dated June 23rd, 2006,
yeah.
Does that list the Connor letter of June 12th?
Oh, I don't think so. This follows my response to you June 5th. I don't know what was in my response of June 5th. I have received the initial report of their outside accountant. The letter is attached. Okay, so I did give it to you. As you will see, Mr. Connor has initially performed a review, also attached to the company's capital and debt schedules. And then I'd usually give you clean and copies that were marked from the last copies to show what had changed, because it was so much.
Who was overseeing the redemptions? Was it Mr. Connor?
No, Mr. Farrow.
Okay.
We just worked for.
Did these two documents appear accurate to you? What I would have received?
Yes. And apparently in the June 23, I sent you a copy of the June 12th. So.
Yeah, can I have these marked as well?
There's one.
Were all the years subsequent to the hearing, to 2003, years in which Mr. Farrow paid off unsecured notes, or redeemed unsecured notes?
I don't know if he did it every year, but it seemed to be sporadic. Right? That's my recollection, but it's been a while, but I'd have to look.
Were you aware of the existence of the company CL&M?
I eventually was aware of their existence.
Do you know when you first came to understand their existence?
What jumps up to my mind right now is they were noted in a banking department audit as being involved.
Okay. Did you understand what the role of CL&M was at the time?
They were a servicer, and so they were an unlicensed servicer. I think that was the point made, and I forget the year of the exam that CLM need to get licensed. It was going to service loans.
Were you engaging the New Hampshire Banking Department with respect to financial resources?
My firm was retained later, after we had several years, and after the securities piece, I think it was 06, we started to do some work before the banking department for financial resources.
And who was responsible for that work?
I was the primary attorney on the financial resources file, so I'm responsible.
Was Susan LaDuc also?
Susan LaDuca is a banking paralegal, was in our office, who worked primarily on that matter.
Was she interacting with the New Hampshire Banking Department?
Oh, from time to time, and also with the client. She's a consumer compliance person, so she was very good at that work.
Thank you. call your attention to a series of emails dated December of 2006. Do you see those in your package?
I do.
Can you describe for the hearing officer what the conversation was in those emails?
Let me interrupt for a minute. Am I looking at a two-page document that has numbers in the lower right-hand corner of each of 2063 and 2064?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Please proceed, Attorney Maloney.
Thank you. These are copies of internal emails in the office. Susan LeDuc was mentioned. We have, as I said, in our business department at the law firm, there is a corporate finance slash banking and securities group, not per se a form department, but people work in this area. Ms. LeDuc that's her expertise, is primarily in banking. The other people mentioned on this email, Susan Hollinger, John Funk, and Christopher Gallagher are all attorneys in the office who do banking work in particular. My memory has been refreshed in this context was Mr. Gallagher, who now practices down in the Washington, D.C. area, was expected to visit at the holidays, and to such extent would take advantage of perhaps an opportunity if he was meeting or working with any of our business over there to be aware of things that were pending in the office that he wasn't aware of. So this memorandum is to address several issues that were outstanding.
And was one of them financial resources?
Yes.
Okay. What was the discussion surrounding financial resources?
The discussion with whom?
The individuals in the email.
Well, everybody knew of financial resources. Mr. Gallagher isn't familiar with them. He wasn't, since he doesn't practice in Concord. But as you can see, there are several mortgage companies that were listed, and these are matters before the banking department. And so, to the extent we had a matter before the bureau, it was relevant to have Mr. Gallagher aware of it. As I'm looking at this, Jeff, I am referring in my comments to the fact that we had begun redemptions with the Bureau's consent and that things were going well, and I hope to continue to work with the Securities Bureau to get this done. So I was hoping that we could continue and get it done.
Okay. Was there some discussion about matters pending at the banking department with respect to financial resources?
I believe we certainly had gotten letters. Well, maybe we hadn't started working them yet. I'm not sure.
You want to take the time to review it?
Well, I said that, as you, it mentioned several mortgage companies, and down below I said, the context is they operate under a first mortgage banker's license, so they needed that license to continue. And what my fear was is that they wouldn't be able to continue to do business and earn their way out of the hole they were in if their license was yanked. So I was, in case anybody heard through their connections or contacts of an effort to proceeding to yank the license at banking department, I wanted to be aware so we could respond and represent the client. That was the purpose.
I'm going to ask you to suspend for just a minute, Attorney Spill. Is it fair for me to assume that you're going to want to have this marked for evidence?
Yes.
Then I'm not going to accept it until Attorney Forsey or somebody has redacted from this document references to lending institutions or other entities not associated with FRM. And I know there are a number. So once the redaction occurs, I will accept it. But until such time as that occurs, I'm not going to accept it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that.
Are you going to continue to refer to this in questions with Attorney Maloney?
Yes.
Well, then I'm going to retain it until that line of questioning ends, Attorney Forcier, and at that time I'll give it to you for redaction. Please continue.
What was the decision as to whether Mr. Gallagher would speak with Mr. Hildreth with respect to financial resources?
There was no decision that I'm aware of. I don't know.
Were you aware of Mr. Hildreth's recusal from the financial resources case?
I had learned that he had recused himself at the bureau level, and I forget the exact when I learned it. It may have been, I was wondering why he never signed any of the pleadings. I think he was still at the bureau. And then I eventually saw that, I believe it's his brother, was an investor, so I understood that was likely the situation.
Did you understand it at the time of this email exchange?
Peter, Mr. Hildreth was at the banking department then, so it obviously was not met in my mind's eye at the time I wrote this, no.
Would you have knowledge of whether anybody else in the firm understood his recusal posture at this time?
No, there was no discussion of it, so.
Do you know whether Mr. Gallagher had a personal relationship with Mr. Hildreth?
I do not know.
And in this meeting that was to take place, I assume from the email shortly after this meeting, was that done on behalf of the Gallagher Law Firm?
If it was to occur, it would be in the context of, yes, for the general good of the Gallagher Law Firm and its clients, yes. I don't know whether it occurred, Jeff. Mr. Spill, so I don't know what happened. This was just internal emails, and that was it.
And we had reached a consent agreement with financial resources in January 2007, correct?
I accept your date, sir.
And that was negotiated?
We negotiated for several years, yeah, to reach a point where you were willing to sign an agreement.
I'm going to ask you to suspend. Mr. Spill, can I are we at the point where I can give this letter to Mr. Forcier for redaction?
You want to suspend the hearing?
No, I want to suspend for just a minute to ask you a question,
sure.
Whether or not this can be redacted at this time so we can introduce it sequentially into evidence. Thank you, Mr. Forcier. Please, please continue.
As part of the negotiated settlement, January 2007, do you recall whether the unsecured notes was part of that settlement? The unsecured notes that we had addressed prior to that time?
We addressed everything that we knew of, Jeff. So I believe, as we speak about this, that they were unsecured because they were just notes issued by financial resources.
Yes. And would that have also included the notes to the Stones? Lon Stone and Jackie Stone.
Were they investors in financial resources?
We had talked about our meeting in the spring of 2006. Do you recall your testimony about that?
No, sir.
The Bureau meeting with you in the spring of 2006?
I remember we met up there at financial resources.
And I think you testified that the Stone matter came up.
We probably talked about it, yes. If that's what you want, went there, yeah.
Do you recall if those unsecured notes were also addressed in the consent agreement?
I'd have to look. I honestly recall that they were one of the, as you mentioned, factoring earlier. I believe we had lent money to a Ronnie Stone company. I don't know if he also lent money to financial resources. So I'd have to check my list of note holders and those type of things to see if he was there. I don't recall it offhand. Was he? Was he owed money by Financial Resources?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Can you take a look at the agreement? Does that appear to be the agreement that we reached?
This is January of 07. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes.
And then we did an amendment to it, too, right? There was an amendment agreement, too. July of 07, but I'll go with you. Yeah. Okay, where would you want to?
Does this appear to be the agreement reached in January 2007?
Yes.
I'd like to introduce that.
That's fine. Just so we're absolutely clear, that has the docket of INV00-007. 06-049?
Yes.
Okay.
Although it may be prior to me, have already been attached to the DOJ report as an exhibit, but I wasn't sure.
I don't recall. So, therefore, I'm going to mark it. Attorney Wingate, do you have any questions?
I have no questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. I do, Attorney Maloney.
Yes, sir.
It's clear to me, although it hasn't been stated directly, and therefore I'm going to ask you to confirm, that you've also represented either Scott Farah or FRM or some business entity as a predecessor to FRM before the New Hampshire Banking Commission. Am I correct in that assumption?
The same entity, Financial Resources and Assistance of the Lakes Region, Inc., and it changed its name several times. In 06, we started to assist in his work, in his relationship with the banking department. So people in my office started corresponding with the banking department on behalf of FRM from that time forward.
Did that assistance extend to rendering advice relative to the results of periodic banking examinations?
Yes.
Okay. At the beginning of your testimony, and please correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah.
I believe you indicated that Scott Farah used promissory notes and some form of deposit account to raise funds.
Yes, sir.
Could you help me understand what you meant by some form of deposit account? If you know, how did that account function?
Mr. Chairman, it looked like a deposit card that you would get at a bank with beneficiaries on it and Social Security numbers, so as if he was taking deposits. And he had maybe 30 or 40 people who had deposited money with him under those. I was taken aback. Mr. Chairman, he also sold promissory notes Series A preferred stock. He didn't have any authority to sell preferred stock, so he...
Well, I understand that, to be honest, I've been here since October and reading since September.
Yes, sir.
And I have never heard of deposit accounts.
Well, it wasn't really a deposit because he wasn't a bank, so he couldn't deposit it, but that's what it looked like, and that's what it sounded like. Yeah, he just left money with him and earned interest on it. Yes, sir. But that was part of the process. We got rid of those as we worked through to a final consent
agreement. I bet you did.
We paid off all of that. We redeemed all the preferred stock. We redeemed the notes.
Do you have any recollection as to how long this practice of having this vehicle of deposit account existed within this entity?
I have no idea, sir.
So obviously it existed sometime subsequent to 2001.
At least in order to redeem them, because I saw them, yes.
Because you saw them?
Yes. I saw the paperwork, yes.
And it's your testimony that through your efforts, this practice was terminated?
To my knowledge, sir.
To your knowledge. Fair enough.
Yes.
Do you have any recollection as a time frame of when you would have given advice to your client to terminate this practice? Can you help me with that?
It was very shortly thereafter. It was clear that he couldn't bring any more money into financial resources one way or another. He had to stop borrowing money, whether through deposits or issuing notes, and he had to. We proceeded to work through the assets he had to turn those into liquid money, so we could start unwinding some of the positions he had with all these note holders and stuff. That
certainly possessed no license to be any kind of any form of a savings.
No, sir, he did not.
I note in an item that has been submitted into evidence from Attorney Connor that there was a zero after the accounts. Michelle, can we locate that document?
On the bottom of page one of his letter, it looks like that's keep going. So it looks like we did have 68,000 that were redeemed out.
Okay.
So this is how we tried to group all the instrument holders between those that allegedly had preferred stock and some that just had notes and some had these accounts.
So is it fair to say from my reading of that letter that on 12/31/02 there was one account payable that had at least some kind of a face value, if you will, at $68,000?
Mr. Chairman, the 68 number sounds right, but my recollection is that there were numerous.
Well, it appears that it might be one account payable is a view of the entity, but it also appears there may be multiple components of that one account.
That could be. But 68 sounds about the right number. It wasn't huge compared to the other sources of funds.
It's also fair to say that by 6/12/06, that was fully, I guess I'm going to use the word redeemed.
Yes, sir. Paid off. Returned.
I have nothing further, but that might change who I want as a witness.
I just have one other line of questions. Sorry, I neglected to get into this just to be thorough. The letter dated October 30th. First of all, can you take a look at that?
Of 09?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Can you identify that letter for the chairman?
This is a letter I wrote to the Bureau in response to their request for information, further information arising from internet advertisement that the banking department had identified, in which Financial Resources was advertising potential investment opportunities in various different forms. In particular, in addition to the advertisement in the last year as the tribunal might have heard the federal and then the state people have passed a new mortgage licensing statute. It's called the SAFE Act. So that's been in particular focus at the banking department in the last couple of years. And it was something we had been working with financial resources with. There's no doubt about it for a lender such as financial resources that they needed these licenses. Mr. Farah and at least maybe one other or more people in his office. And they just had never come. It was still outstanding at the time that the banking department contacted us about this advertisement. We eventually, the advertisement was taken down, but we were able to get copies of what was listed, and we provided those to the Bureau. In this letter, I attempted in a more banking department language to again describe table funding and to try to say how even using these letters, a security may not have been issued if it was table funded. The investors or people who were going to be the owners of the loan would forward their money to the closing agent, never to financial resources that they used to fund the loan and to pay the cost of making the loan, and the note and mortgage would be issued in the name of the lenders. So, in effect, this is what this letter is, Jeff, a fancy table funding letter.
And this is a letter you addressed to me after I asked you about the website, right?
About the advertisement and the materials, yes.
Can I have that one?
Absolutely.
That's all I wanted to know.
Attorney Wingate, Attorney Forcier.
Mr. Chandler, I have a redacted version of the email you had just asked me to redact.
Okay, I will accept that now in its redacted form. I do have a question, Attorney Maloney, before we conclude, and that is concerning the October 30th letter of 2009. If I read that October 30th letter of 2009, is it fair to say that I conclude from the sum and substance of that is that you're defining to the Bureau of Securities Regulation that in fact your client is not within the area of scrutiny envisioned by the Uniform Securities Act?
If the client funded a loan in conjunction with in accordance with this factual description, they would not issue a security, and then they should be fine under the Securities Act. Was the context that I wrote this?
That's what
the
I
table finding is basically. So a security wouldn't be issued by financial resources in order to fund a loan.
Thank you. That's all. I have nothing further.
Thank you, Mr. Walker.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, simply a question of the presiding officer. You indicated that the prior court communication raised in your mind the need of a witness, and I was curious if the presiding hearing there might consider to be that witness.
Excuse me?
You had said that the prior communication indicated that a witness should be produced, and I was wondering if that witness would be.
I'm going to review my records, and it may very well be somebody from banking who was involved in examination. Attorney Maloney, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
The exhibits that I guess had marked for identification that I have not asked to be introduced, I would take those back.
You certainly can have them back. It's got the label, what's this? Thank you, sir. Are there any other matters this afternoon?
That I read the one sentence verbatim that we changed on the PowerPoint if you'd like.
On the record, this Attorney Forcier entering in the sentence on the PowerPoint presentation that did not appear on the screen during the presentation. Attorney Forcier.
This number should be reduced by the amount of interest paid to lenders on the loans. This number was not calculated given the substantial undertaking necessary and the lack of sufficient records.
Would you like a copy of that additional statement?
No, that's fine. That will then appear. Okay. Is there anything else this afternoon?
No, sir.
Okay. That'll conclude the proceeding for today. And we will...
Tomorrow what time?
Tomorrow.